Good morning and blessed Monday, everybody. This is Hometown Alaska at Alaska Public Media. I am your host today, Justin Williams. I'm extremely blessed and pleased to be here with you today. It is February 28th, which means February is over. And you know what? We got to talk about Black History Month. We just got to dive into it. It's been a fantastic month in 2022, and I want to introduce to you some fantastic guests that I have with me to talk about Black history, to talk about the culture, to talk about all of that, and to also talk about education as it pertains to Black history. We have Ken Miller here with us. Now, Ken is a wonderful man. I had the opportunity to meet him in the past couple of months. He is a member of the Association of Fundraising Professionals Global Board of Directors. He's also on the board of directors of the African American Development Officers and Alaska Public Media, as it were, which is awesome. Ken, how you doing today, brother?
I'm doing wonderful, thank you.
All right, I'm happy that you're here with us. It's good to see your face again. And it's great to hear from you. And we also have Brian Belcher here with us, a peer support specialist for Alaska Behavioral Health, a tumbling instructor at Studio 49 School of Dance. And he has performed with Studio 49, Momentum Dance, and Alaska Athletics. Brian, how are we doing today, man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am doing pretty fantastic. It's good to see you again and hear from you again as well. We were just on a panel together a few months ago, and so I'm happy to have you here with us. And I think, Taylor, I think you're here with us. Born in Pittsburgh, graduated from Bartlett, got to represent the Golden Bears. She is currently the public affairs chairwoman for Alaska Coalition of BIPOC Educators. Taylor, if you're here with us, how are you doing?
I am doing well. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Oh, it's great to have you with us, Taylor. Thank you so much for joining us. And I mean, I'm serious. Monday mornings can sometimes just be like, you know, why aren't we all still in bed? Do we really have to do this? So, you know, it's really important to me to be able to talk about this with people that are have a deep history with Alaska. And I'm just really, really pleased that, you know, we've had the opportunity to do this together. So thank you very much for, you know, taking the time out to discuss this with me. And, you know, as Black people, as people of color, I think we can all say that, you know, the month of February means something, right? That we are all intimately and intricately connected to the sorts of things that we learn about ourselves and about our people. In the month of February. And in particular, we see a lot of stores, we see a lot of public educational institutions emphasize the importance of, or rather highlight, you know, achievements that have arisen from the Black community and institutions that support that, right? And every now and again, we do talk about the darker stuff, right? It's not all fireworks and Juneteenth. Sometimes we do take a step back and we talk about colonization and we talk about, you know, what things really were like 50, 60, 70 years ago here in this very country. You know, and I don't believe that that should be avoided necessarily. And as it pertains to education, right, I kind of want to just jump into this. I learned recently at KCUB station, right, operates out of the island of Unalaska. They're a partner of KTOO over in Juneau. They posted an article last year about a teacher by the name of Greta Eustace, whose curriculum in school emphasizes the showcasing of history and culture of Black Americans all year long. Right. So although like that February pause that we are so accustomed to observe the social injustices and inequality of the Black community and also celebrate the Black pioneers' achievements and cultural significance is still important, the idea of the curriculum that she's trying to lay on her students, and which is apparently very, very effective for them, you know, we realize that February shouldn't be the only time that we pause for that sort of reverence and that sort of education. And the article states that what Eustace is effectively establishing is a quote unquote decolonized curriculum. I thought that was so cool. As a parent, I'm a single parent, right? So as a parent of a beautiful young Black daughter who attends public school, I'm curious as to your guys' thoughts on the idea of decolonizing education to celebrate Black history, acknowledge injustices, and be submerged in allyship, and to develop one's own opinions of history instead of just the usual regurgitation, you know, of what we read in the history books and traditional curriculums that most public education in America, you know, would seem to prefer. Do you think that all of our public schools, especially since we're all here in Anchorage, do you think we should be decolonizing our curriculums for public education? What do you guys think about that?
I know that I'm in favor of decolonizing our education because we know that history is written by the victors. So our education system and our curriculum really waters down our history and leaves out, I think, a lot of important topics and a lot of important people. And so I think it's important that we really revise our history and our curriculum, and that we do add in all of our history, the good, the bad, and the ugly, because I think we're doing our kids a disservice not to teach those things, not to, you know, really carry on history and pass down what really happened. And I think that that is part of that decolonization that really needs to take place in our entire school system. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm definitely in favor of decolonizing our curriculum across the board and, excuse me, really just taking the time to teach history, teach true history, teach real history, because Black history and, you know, Asian American history mm-hmm. and Hispanic history, it's all a part of, you know, what's made our country and how we are here today. Mm.
You absolutely, that nails it right there. And, you know, I do find it a little interesting that we just don't talk about it a whole lot. February, it seems to flare up a lot of emotions. It seems to flare up a lot of good emotions and bad emotions, right? A lot of allyship and activism, but also a lot of guilt and, you know, among other things. I do think if this is something that we talked about year round, if it's something we talked about in the summer where there isn't school, right, that the younger generation would have a better understanding of the importance of that culture, the importance of their identity, and what that means to not just the country, but also what we bring to the entire globe, you know? Sometimes we are encouraged to think on a micro level scale instead of macro. And I think when we start with education, the entire world starts to change and starts to be affected. Brian, do you have any thoughts on this?
I think that, you know, when it comes to the education in all cultures, especially, the only way that we can change the stigma that follows the cultures and like really break those chains of racism and discrimination is through understanding the history as a whole. Mm-hmm. As we begin to understand the history and understand previous injustices and the things that have happened to not only the Black culture, but, you know, the Alaska Native culture, mm-hmm. the Asian culture, and those different cultures, we can truly understand, like, you know, what is happening generationally yeah. throughout those families and throughout those cultures, and begin to educate each other and those around us on how to properly respect the cultures and properly incorporate those cultures into life moving forward. Because I mean, when we look at it, we're not going anywhere. Mm. It's not going to be one of those, you know, oh well, this happened back in the day, but we don't got to worry about it anymore. It's still something that like is still there and still present, and the only way to change that is to educate about it, and then collectively we can work together on moving forward and making changes and creating the life that we need. Mm-hmm.
I hear you, absolutely. You said something that really caught my attention. You said understanding history, right? Not just hearing it, not just listening to other people talk, but actually understanding, which entails a whole lot. For better or for worse, understanding the history of a culture is a very nuanced thing that requires a lot of empathy. And that requires a lot of practice. That requires a lot of communication, right? And so being able to do that and to express that properly, I think, is very important, because some of these conversations, they start fights. People are sensitive about stuff like this, and not just people of color, everyone. This is a very sensitive topic for everyone, you know. And we do have to take, I totally agree with you, though. I think we do really have to sit down and take a real look at what happened in the past, how it pertains to what's happening today, especially in our schools. Are we understanding these sorts of things in our schools? You know, and that's something I think about all the time. Ken, what do you think about this? Go ahead, Brian.
Go ahead, Brian.
I think one of the hard things when it comes to talking about when it comes to talking about the history of, you know, the African American culture, and talking about the discrimination that's happened to Black people throughout history, it puts schools in a really hard spot to have that conversation, because, you know, we want to protect our youth and protect our children, and, you know, make sure we're shielding them from bad things. Mm-hmm. But our history is not all great.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things, the only way that we can really begin to understand that is, like, also beginning to understand where things were wrong. And you can't just talk about the good. You have to talk about the bad too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or nothing else. What's the point?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that is something that I mentioned earlier. Like, we do have to take a dive into, you know, the real history of the culture. It's not all rainbows and sunshine. It's not all barbecues and Juneteenth, even though I'd like it to be sometimes. But the reality is that there would be no need for, you know, for activism today, for anti-racist behaviors and institutions today, if there weren't martyrs before us who really stood on the front lines and sacrificed their reputations, some of their lives, for us to even be on this radio station today. Ken, what are your thoughts about this?
So my thoughts are, I'm from a different generation than some of the others on the call. They're obviously younger, and I grew up in the 70s and 80s.
Mm.
We never talked about this. I had to Google it, mm-hmm, to understand what the heck the question was. But I understand it now that I Googled it and looked up the definition, but it wasn't a conversation that we had in the 70s or 80s. I can tell you that, mm-hmm, right now. But having heard about it, remember, you know, to the victor goes the spoils of war.
Mm.
And the victory was white Anglo-Saxon men in this country. They were the victors. Okay. So they wrote history to define their greatness and their magnitude, and to marginalize other communities, because they needed, for, I believe, economic, mm-hmm, and also social reasons, to be on top. And so we get the byproduct today, where there are indigenous populations and populations that have been marginalized who are now saying, no, there's more history, and I'm not going to listen and or just take your history.
Mm-hmm.
I want my history to be on the forefront. I want my history to be shared. But in the end, I always come back, what's our desired result? What do we, when we change history, and we don't change it, we reveal history.
Mm-hmm.
When we reveal history, that's what historians do. They reveal the past, and they interpret it, but they reveal it. And when we reveal it, one of the things, the byproducts, is that different populations have an opportunity to be proud of their forefathers and foremothers or past generations, and the battle that they fought with adverse conditions to be able to produce a population and a peoples today that are proud and are worthy of, you know, the largesse that is, at least in the United States. So, you know, I can, you know, again, I have interpretations, but, you know, this is the beautiful thing. This is being shared. Right. You know, the individual you talked about in the beginning is sharing this throughout the year. But I'm going to tell you right now, you know, our history for the African Americans in the 70s came from roots. 1977. That's where we got our history.
Right.
You know, as an African American. And, you know, because it wasn't being taught in the U.S. history we took, in world history we took. I didn't get it until I went to college and started reading Frantz Fanon, you know, The Wretched of the Earth, and started seeing how the Algerians, you know, revolted against the French in Northern Africa and started getting a sense of getting out of that colonial mindset and saying that we are proud people and we are going to represent what we believe in. So that's my... my little 2 cents on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that, Ken. And, you know, I wanted to kind of reiterate something that you said is that, you know, we talked about this on other panels too. We're not taught this in school, which is problematic, which is the entire the entire point of decolonizing the curriculum, so that we are taught this stuff, so that it's normalized, right? It's not just reserved for the shortest month of the year. Or even if it was the longest month of the year, the fact of the matter is that it's still a year. And one of, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to gather you three specifically is because we're all different ages. Brian, I think you and I are the same age. You know, can you emphasize you're from a different generation? You have a completely different perspective, which is valuable, and one which I definitely interested in. And Taylor, I think you're the youngest one here. You know, as far as, you know, you graduated, you were the valedictorian in 2010 from Bartlett High, right? Now I graduated, Brian's like, yeah. Now I went no valedictorian, but I graduated in 07. Now, statistically, Bartlett High is still the second most racially diverse high school in North America. There's something to be said about that, especially for all of us who went there and graduated from there. But even there, despite the social aspects, and Taylor, I definitely want to pick your brain on this as we kind of dive into our next question before we take a break, is that we still weren't taught a lot of Black history, even then, you know. Do you, I mean, what, if you could go back, we can't go back, but if you could go back, what is something that you would make sure you learned about Black history before you graduated in 2010, Taylor?
I think the contributions of Black people is something that I would want to go back and learn. I know that when I went to Bartlett, there was a Black history class, but it was an elective. So, you know, it wasn't something that was necessarily advertised. So it wasn't something that was necessarily on my radar because I didn't even really know we had it. So that is something I would go back and learn about the contributions, because I think that's something that is intentionally left out of our curriculum. And we're putting Black people in a certain light in our curriculum where it's just slavery, they struggled, you know, they got free, and then, you know, they struggled some more, and then there was affirmative action, and then there were civil rights laws, and then now everything's great. And that's kind of the standard curriculum that we teach, and so that's what I learned. But you don't see really the good things, the positive things. You don't see the critical infrastructure or critical systems or critical products and inventors and scientists and, you know, doctors and lawyers and, you know, people that have contributed to, you know, government and just our society in general. we don't learn any of that. And so for Bartlett to be as diverse as it was, sometimes like diversity in terms of education is more of a tokenism thing, or schools don't take advantage of the fact that their population is diverse and then adapt to that for the students, if that makes sense.
That makes a whole lot of sense to me. And I thank you for answering that question. Ken and Brian, I'm going to let you guys answer this question right after we take a short break. For everyone that's listening, this is Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Justin Williams, and I'm here with Ken Miller, Brian Belcher, and Taylor Mitchell discussing Black history in Alaska and education. Give us a call if you're in Anchorage at 907-550-8433, statewide at 1-888-353-5752, or feel free to email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
The conversations you hear on Hometown Alaska are focused on the needs and voices of Alaskans, and the generosity of Alaskans brings them to you. Join your neighbors and become a member of your public radio station today.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. If you're just tuning in, I'm today's host, Justin Williams, facilitating a conversation about Black history, Black culture, and education. Our guests today are Taylor Mitchell, Brian Belcher, and Ken Miller. For everyone that's listening out there, just know that this is a live show. Feel free to be a part of the conversation. If you, if you attended public school, is there something that you were taught in school about Black history that has helped positively shape your perspectives as an adult? You know, or was there something that you wish you were taught about Black history in public school that you weren't? If you have any ideas about that or any answers, feel free to give us a call. If you're in Anchorage, 907-550-8433, statewide, 1-888-353-5752, or feel free to email us at hometown@alaskapublic.com. Taylor, Ken, Brian, thank you so much for being with me. And I just kind of wanted to address to you guys the same question that I just asked about Taylor. If there was something, if we could go back in time, if you could go back in time to high school, what's something that you would make sure you learned about Black history?
I'll speak to that. Sure. That's a sort of weird question to me, but so first of all, I believe that it's a lot of it has to do with parents. Mm-hmm. I think your parents should be teaching you about Black history and exposing you to Black history. Mm-hmm. That's my belief. And I would love that schools would add to that. But many times our parents don't, because they weren't taught.
Right.
Black history.
Right.
Or they didn't have an opportunity, or they weren't educated to the level that they've done the research. I was very, very fortunate. My mother was highly educated and exposed me. I grew up in New York City, so I got to go to the Schomburg and I got to see Black culture, but I was a little different than many of the individuals. Just want to give a real quick history of what the experience was for me in high school as a Black gentleman. Mm. I went to Bartlett, 76 to 1980. And at that time, the schools, very simply, we were integrated. And what I mean by that, we had a large Black population because we had Elmendorf and Fort Ridge. Mm-hmm. And then East had a large Black population in West. And then we would look at Service and Diamond because they didn't have any. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had so few. We knew the families, okay, that were at Service and Diamond. the few African American. But the thing was, when I went to school at Bartlett, we had so few African American teachers. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have those role models, right, which is always a concern. And then there were racial issues that were happening because we're coming off the 60s. This is the mid 70s. And there were difficulties. I remember we had a big fight with Kodiak, you know, high school came through on a basketball game. And it was a big fight because some words were exchanged that were derogatory toward African-American players. Mm-hmm. I remember we had a big situation in our parking lot. A bunch of guys from West came over and we had a racial incident. Those were, I'm not going to say common, but they were not uncommon,
right,
due to race. So having that, and then this is probably the main situation or concern, and you're talking about what I would change, is that the counselors were white. Mm-hmm. And so what they were doing, they would try to pigeonhole you by your background into maybe you should do vocational, maybe you should go to Anchorage Community College, get a 2-year degree. And I was very, very fortunate that the head counselor observed me when I was in 10th grade and said, I'm going to work with this one in particular, and got me on a track that I could go to an Ivy League school. So LaTanya Lee went to Harvard. I went to Dartmouth. That was very unusual back in the 70s to go to an Ivy League school for an African-American in Anchorage.
Right.
So we were fortunate. So if I could have made any change or anything that I could have learned differently, you know, within that context, I don't know if that's what, but I would have loved to have seen more African-American teachers and more African-Americans in the positions of being counselors, of ones that led you in a direction for your career growth and or your next step coming out of high school. Mm. Leave it at that.
I hear you there. And one thing that I have seen personally, being in high school and graduating in 07 and also going to UAA from 09 to 2015, is that we do see more black counselors. We do see more people of color in those positions, which personally really excites me. And I see that we do have a couple of callers here. So I'd like to definitely put them on. Miss Julie from Anchorage, how are we doing today?
Great. I'm glad for this conversation.
Yeah.
I was fortunate to grow up in Gary, Indiana, and I started school in the 60s, but I went to an all-black elementary school, which was in my neighborhood. It was like a 2-block walk to school in the mornings. Yeah. And, you know, so we had all-black teachers. We had this formidable black principal who had gone to Tuskegee Institute. And I was just lucky to have that early foundation in black history and role models of the teachers and the counselors. I mean, we sang the black national anthem every morning. And so then later, when I went to predominantly white junior high and high school, you know, that was not there, of course.
Right.
And so, you know, I just feel grateful for that early exposure to black history that I got. And also the neighborhood I lived in and my household was intergenerational. So there were older black people around who were always teaching us things and exposing us to things. So I just wanted to express my gratitude for having had that and say that I agree with Ken. You know, it's hard if you don't have black teachers and counselors, you know, around to mentor you and provide that strong foundation early on.
Absolutely, Julie. I couldn't agree with you more. Thank you so much for holding to share your experience with us. That's a very beautiful experience that you've had. And I'm so glad that you had the opportunity to share that with us. Thank you so much, Julie. I really appreciate that.
Conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. And we also have Craig. Craig from Wasilla. How are we doing today, Craig?
It's a pleasure to be on. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I was just wanted to call and comment. I was lucky enough, even though I was born in a very small town in Wisconsin, part of our world history class, we learned about Frederick Douglass, and we spent 2 weeks watching Roots. They brought that up earlier in the show, and that was like a huge portion of our thing. And then our literature arts community did the same thing. And there's like 5,000 people, and they're predominantly white, but we did our best. And this is an early 90s. So, I mean, I can only like lightly say that like I was lucky to learn a little bit, but I moved to Anchorage, and now I'm living with Scylla. But Anchorage is a very diverse place, and living around all these different people, I want to learn more, and I'm so glad that you guys are talking about this. Like, the world is changing forward, and it's really nice to see that. That's all I wanted to comment on. I didn't know what else to say.
No, that's beautiful, Craig. I really appreciate that. I think it's wonderful. So, you know, speaking of Roots, you know, I was born in 89. So my parents showing that to me much later in life really drove home this idea that, like, wow, people that look like me, this is what we actually went through. Because, again, like we've been talking about, this is not the kind of stuff that we're necessarily taught in school. You don't really see that a whole lot in the history books, you know. And I think it's pretty astonishing that we've gone, you know, from our history as we know it here to where we are today. You know, Ken, you said you grew up in New York. My mom's from Queens. Her and I discuss all the time her perspective on Black history, how when she was a kid, she'd walk down the street, you know, and she'd see the Black Panthers, and she'd at first hand see, you know, the positive institutions that they were, you know, pouring into, or the programs that they were starting, you know, for marginalized neighborhoods and communities and stuff like that. And so growing up for me, you know, my idea of racism was completely different. The way that I experienced it as a young boy in public school, it was different. And I think it was probably different for all of us because we're from different generations. But now I look at you, Ken. We had lunch a few months ago. I know your history, and I know, well, you know, at least from what you told me, where you came from and where you are today. Brian, we were on a panel you know, not long ago for Recovery Alaska. So I know a little bit about, you know, you as an artist and the sorts of things that you pour yourself into. And Taylor, you're part of the Alaska Coalition for BIPOC Educators. Your job is excruciatingly important. And I look at all three of you and I see business people, you know. I don't know if you agree with that all of you are a part of business or have a business, but I look at you all and I see people of business. And that really, really excites me. I had, you know, we just had a great success, with the Black Business Expo held at the Anchorage Museum, right, this year. And I wanted to ask you guys, do you feel that public education has been directly tied to the advancement of Black business today, Black owned business? At least here in Anchorage.
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think that I don't think our public education system as it is really prepares students adequately to go out into the world and be independent, and really contribute to society and, you know, to be an entrepreneur or, you know, whatever else you want to be. I think that it's a great disservice that we do to our youth, because I feel like they come out more unprepared for life and what's next. So I think that we can do a much better job in our public education system to not just teach to a test or, you know, meeting some kind of benchmark. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we kick them out after high school and then it's like, well, good luck. mm-hmm. And I think that our youth really struggle sometimes post high school because we have not adequately prepared them, giving them the necessary skills. And, you know, your SATs and ACTs and, you know, all the benchmark tests, you know, those are, you know, kind of good in terms of evaluating, you know, kind of a little bit of what do you know and that kind of thing. But those tests don't prepare you to be a business owner. Those tests don't prepare you, you know, really to go out and, you know, rent an apartment or buy a house or, you know, do different things like that. So I don't think that our system really puts our youth in the best place post, you know, their education, their public education.
Mm-hmm. I would adamantly agree. You know, looking at the quote unquote, the system, right? But like looking at, you know, particular curriculums in schools and even talking to certain teachers and programs, and of course, looking at my own personal experience, I would absolutely agree. I was highly unprepared to be where I am today. You know, school taught me a lot of magnificent things. And if there were some things I could go back and change, I would change them, sure. But overall, had a great experience, and I met great people. I had the blessing of having some great teachers, right? Like people who actually cared. We didn't all have that experience. But to have a professor, a principal that actually has your back, therapists that actually have your back, or counselors, rather, that actually have your back, that's a blessing. But no, I still felt extremely unprepared. And so, Taylor, I can't agree with you more. Brian, what are your thoughts on this?
So when it comes to the school systems, I went to private school. Mm-hmm. I went to a boarding school out of state. And it was, I agree with the same things that Taylor's saying. You know, I was someone who struggled a lot scholastically. And it was just kind of one of those things. I was just kind of pushed to the side and, you know, just make sure I hit, like, you know, the bare minimum of these benchmarks. And then once I, when I left high school and I'm trying to go to college, like I was not ready on, like, not just like a this is overwhelming level, just foundationally not ready emotionally, scholastically. There was like, I didn't know what I was doing. And then like, as I progressed through adulthood, all these things that people just assume, oh, well, you know, you're 20 now, you should know how to do this. Just go fill out this application, get this credit card, do these things. But it was not like the only way that I learned it, only way I got to where I've gotten now is trial and error and hands down just struggle. And then, you know, there can be so many different speculations on, like, you know, what it is and how I got to where I'm at. But I mean, first and foremost, I don't want to blame it on anything that has to do with race or ethnicity or anything like that, because my parents are very successful people. Mm-hmm. I blame the education system. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes to, once again, understanding culture,
right.
Culturally, it's going to be like, you know, it's going to affect how you communicate with people and how that communication is working. It's going to affect how they learn. And people not understanding me culturally in my environments, it affected how I learned. Like, you know, there was no common ground found for, like, you know, let's figure out how we can communicate. And I really feel like, you know, schools understanding, having a solid, firm understanding of the culture and of ways to connect with people really affects how things are brought across and how things are learned. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've noticed just in my line of work is once you can identify with somebody's identify with somebody and just the most basics of levels, which for me, you know, under someone understanding and identifying with me as a Black man, as a gay man, as an artist, you know, it really helps me open up and connect to them a lot more than someone who's just going to throw information at me and be like, okay, you got that right, peace out.
Right.
I did my job.
Yeah, and that's an interesting mentality. You know, it kind of feels like we're all in an educational assembly line. You know, we do the bare minimum, we put all the pieces together, and then, you know, we kind of get shipped out, and we're not really taught how the real world works. We're just expected to understand because of our age. And that's something I've also experienced as well. And, you know, when I was talking, when Taylor, when you had originally answered these questions, Ken, you were like, yeah, absolutely. You were like, I totally agree. So what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on this? I'd love to hear from you.
First of all, thank you, Julie. I know Julie personally, and I'm glad to hear you on the call. So a part of it, you got to understand, why does the United States government underwrite education? Period. Why? Because they wanted an educated, capitalist, industrial workforce.
Right.
And individuals had to be able to operate machinery in the industrial age. Okay. So they said, hey, we've got to educate. So we're going to funnel money through the states and get to, now, I mean, this is a real broad one. I did some genealogy a couple of years ago to get my family origins. And when you look down south, until 1950, 90% of my forefathers and forebears stopped school at sixth grade, period. Mm. End of story. And earlier than that, they would put on the census whether they could read or not, illiterate or literate. And predominantly, especially the men, were illiterate, my forebear, because they didn't want to educate because it was an agrarian society. And then we grow up, and then time goes along, and we realize we need to educate these individuals so they can be a part of this industrial machinery to keep the forces that are in power enrich them. Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then we get to the point where we're at now, that society is again doing a change from this industrial, this post-industrial type of setup, to individuals being entrepreneurs and individuals not saying, I'm not going to work 30 years for AT&T. I'm not going to work 30 years for Boeing. Period. Mm. I'm not going to do that. And so are we preparing individuals? And the most, I think one of the most important things in the preparation is give individuals self-confidence, let alone the skills to feel comfortable in doing their thing. You know, I've been working with ACLT, Anchorage Community Land Trust, and they have an entrepreneur class. Mm. And I go out there and I do a little teaching out there. And I love it. I love it because these are young people in their 20s and 30s who say, I'm not going to get on that treadmill. I'm not going to play that game that I grew up playing. I'm a corporate guy. I worked for AT&T. I worked for Kodak. I did the corporate world because that's what I was programmed to do. Mm. And then 8 years ago, I got off and did my own thing. I have my own company now. But this is the other thing I want to say. There aren't any Black businesses in Anchorage. And if people have a problem with that, so be it. The percentage of African-American or BIPOC-owned businesses is so small, it is ridiculous. Mm. And it's up to us as individuals who are African-American to try to grow that and get that next generation in and say, yeah, you can do it. You can start a business in that area. We got $10 billion coming down from the infrastructure. And how much of that is going to the BIPOC community?
Right.
I want you to think about that.
Right.
That money's coming. And then you have to have an organization or company that can avail themselves of that. Do you have the training to do that? Do you have the training to do the request for proposal or the grant proposal? No. Mm-hmm. And they set it up like that.
Right.
So again, I'm not a big believer that there is a Black business community. We have a few. I know them. Mm-hmm. Business Boutique, Jasmine, that whole group. I got that. Mm-hmm. But we have a dearth of individuals from, and I'd like to use the word BIPOC because I don't want to just, because a lot of times I talk about the African-American experience because that's my experience.
Right.
But my Hispanic brothers,
right,
my indigenous, you know, peoples, you know, represent.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Right on. See, and this is why this is so important. I mean, imagine doing what we do, but only talking about it in between February 1st and February 28th, and then the rest of the year, not even putting this conversation on the table. I think that's wild. So I'm really happy to be able to be talking with you guys about this, and hopefully we all feel encouraged to continue this conversation when this is over, and hopefully everybody listening will be encouraged to also have this conversation when it's time for you guys to turn the radio off. And if you're just tuning in, you are listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Justin Williams, with guests Ken Miller, Brian Belcher, and Taylor Mitchell. We're here discussing Black culture, Black history, and education. Go ahead and give us a call if you're in Anchorage, 907-550-8433, statewide at 1-888-353-5752, or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everybody, welcome back to Hometown Alaska. If you're just tuning in, I'm your host, Justin Williams, facilitating a conversation about Black history, culture, and education. Our guests today are Taylor Mitchell, Brian Belcher, and Ken Miller. So for everyone just tuning in, feel free to chime in. This is a live show. I absolutely love to hear from you. Has your personal education had a direct influence on your ideas of Black culture or Black identity? Maybe, you know, let me know, what does the phrase Black excellence mean to you personally? You know, feel free to give us a call, you know, chime into the show. You're a part of this. Thank you for listening, but feel free to make sure your voice is heard. Give us a call if you're in Anchorage. That's 907-550-8433, statewide at 1-888-353-5752, or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Everybody, Brian, Ken, Taylor, thank you so much for being a part of this conversation, co-facilitating this with me. I feel very encouraged, you know, right now. And, you know, these past couple of years have been, I think, particularly hard, just with everything that's been going on. I'd say since kind of the beginning of 2020, things have, you know, felt a little bit more stressful than necessary. And so we've been having these conversations, me and my squad, me and my team, me and my friends and family have been having these conversations a whole lot more and a whole lot more and a whole lot more. And I always feel very, very happy and very, very encouraged when we're able to have these discussions with open-minded people, you know, who may also feel the same way that I do. And, you know, we got to wrap this up in a little bit. And I wanted to ask you guys, you know, we have a variety of organizations and institutions here in Anchorage that aim to observe and preserve, you know, Black history, celebrate Black culture, and advance Black education and highlight Black achievements. You know, Taylor, you're on the Alaska Coalition for BIPOC Educators. The larger question was, you know, what are some of the organizations that we have access to in Alaska to participate in the observation and celebrations of the Black community year long instead of just February? And Taylor, I definitely wanted to talk to you about that because of your position, you know? I mean, I feel like you're on the front lines to make sure that people know we don't just quit on March 1st, you know? So tell us a little bit about the organization that you work with.
So yes, with the Alaska Coalition of BIPOC Educators, our main focus is education. So we are focusing on having solid education system for our youth. We're having, you know, a focus on our educators and, you know, really helping the BIPOC community. I think, you know, most people recognize within the Anchorage School District, we do not have adequate representation in terms of principals, counselors, staff, right, teachers. And so that's where my comment earlier about, even though we have a diverse population and, you know, we have diversity in most of our schools, the teacher population and our staff and our counselors and our principal population does not match the diversity that we have in terms of students. So the group that I work with, we really aim to help out the BIPOC community in, you know, advocating for them and fighting for them in terms of education. So some of the stuff that we do is we go to school board meetings and we advocate on behalf of teachers, on behalf of the staff, principals, on behalf of students. We reach out to parents and we, you know, advocate on behalf of them if their child is having issues in school, especially if they are racial in nature. I think people don't necessarily realize, because again, you know, Anchorage, we're really diverse. I think some people, you know, really don't think that the BIPOC community struggles, and we really do. We have a lot of issues within the BIPOC community. We also do rallies. We have our general membership meetings where we really encourage people to get involved in their community, in their neighborhoods, in their schools. We encourage people to go to the assembly meetings. And we ourselves, you know, we try to get to as many assembly meetings as we can. So education really is one of those super critical institutions. And if you are not educated, if you don't know history, and especially the BIPOC community, if you don't even know your own history, that puts you in a really precarious predicament. So yeah, our group really tries to focus on empowering the BIPOC community and using education as a tool, because I think, you know, one of the, you know, sayings is, you know, knowledge is power, and it really is. It's the power for you to do what you want to do. If you want to be an entrepreneur and to kind of break out of the system, and, you know that, you know, you are confident in you and your ability and your skills, and, you know, wanting people to make a difference within their community. So I love working with the Alaska Coalition of BIPOC Educators, because, you know, we really get to get into the nitty gritty of education and helping our youth to be able to, you know, be prepared out in the world, and to give our BIPOC parents and students an avenue to address the issues that they have. Because I know specifically within the Anchorage School District, it's really hard to find those avenues when you're having an issue or people to talk to. And so I think a lot of our BIPOC community ends up feeling left out or kind of helpless, because they don't know, you know, who to reach out to when their child is having issues. Yes, we're definitely looking for volunteers. We're definitely looking for anybody that wants to be involved. And you don't have to be an educator to volunteer with us, because everyone in some sense is an educator of our youth. Mm-hmm. Whether you're a parent, a grandparent, whether you work at the grocery store, whether you're a nurse, a doctor, you know, whether you're a janitor, each one of us plays a large role in our youth. So don't let that, you know, be a drawback for you. We are the Alaska Coalition of BIPOC Educators, but everyone is a educator.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for that, Taylor. You know, and we do have, you know, we have a few institutions here that are doing amazing work. We do have the Alaska Coalition of BIPOC Educators. We have the Alaska Black Caucus. We have, you know, our own chapter of the NAACP here. You know, and speaking of which, you know, I wanted to let everybody know, especially those who are tuning in and listening, that there are actually readings from the book Black History in the Last Frontier, written by Ian C. Hartman. Those recordings were made possible by the NAACP, and those can be listened to on alaskapublic.org. So feel free to tune in, you know, and listen to those. Hopefully they'll serve as, you know, an encouragement to you today and tomorrow, especially tomorrow, as a matter of fact. And so, everybody, we're about to wrap up. It's almost time. But before I let you guys go, I just wanted to say thank you so much for being here with me, and for having this conversation with me, for educating me, you know, and for helping me co-facilitate. And so I wanted to end on a happier note. Taylor, I would like to address this question to you first. My original last question was, what is your favorite thing about Black History Month? But Black History is more than a month. So what is your favorite thing about Black History?
I would say, all of the entrepreneurs and people that have contributed to not only Black history, but just in the greater umbrella of United States history. Mm-hmm. I, you know, have taken it upon myself, especially during Black History Month, to learn about at least one Black person that has contributed to American history. And so I would say that's my favorite thing, is learning mm-hmm. about all of the important people and contributions that Black people have contributed, and thinking about the things that we do today, the things we use today, mm-hmm. and where those things originated from.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. I love to hear it. Brian, what is your favorite thing about Black history?
I'd say my favorite thing about Black history is that it is a chance. It's the melting pot of so many different cultures and so many different aspects. You know, there are so many facets to Black history that mm-hmm. I have a chance to dive into and really appreciate how they have helped shape the amazing individual that I am continually growing to be. Mm.
Well said, brother. That's fantastic. And Mr. Ken Miller, what is your favorite thing about Black history?
Well, one comment before that. I don't think Black history is just February.
That's right.
And that hasn't been my experience. Mm. As of, you know, they may put a month, quote unquote, to appease certain groups and or to make themselves feel good and not guilty. But for me, Black history is throughout the year.
That's right.
And I believe the conversation in the last 2 years, and I don't want to leave again with a bad note, but George Floyd died and was martyred. And because of him, I've been on more conversations and have had more even action happen due to his death. And again, he was a martyr for our cause. But for, I'm going to just give this one for Black history. My go-to period is Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream speech. And when he talks about going to the top of the mountaintop and looking out over that visage, or seeing that and knowing that he may not be there with us to celebrate some of the successes. And we've had successes in these last 30, 40 years. It literally brings tears to my eye. It puts a lump in my throat. And I have it as a YouTube video, and I watch it at times. And that's like my favorite moment of listening to, again, a martyr who died for the cause and gave his life for the cause. But, you know, this, and I'm gonna live, this is my happy note. I believe we're progressing. I truly believe we are progressing. Mm-hmm. And I believe that the BIPOC community is saying, we're not going to go with the status quo. We're not going to literally engage and play by your rules. We are going to stand up for what we believe in. We're going to have some self-esteem and represent what we believe is our truth. And for that, I'm so glad. I think this next generation is going to do some incredible things. And I still got to play my part, but I only have so many, you know, more time that I can play that part. But again, I want to thank all the individuals on this call, especially the younger individuals on this call, because you guys are the future. And I believe we have, I believe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Ken, Brian, Taylor. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody listening. This has been Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Justin Williams. Our audio engineer today is Tobin Shelby. Have a blessed day. We'll see you next time.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.